Back together again, you and I chatting it up, wrapping up a very busy week, Friday style, April the 17th, 2026, right here on Connecticut Today. I open up the show talking about a new commission announced by Governor Ned Lamont to look at how the state's public education system is funded. Blogger and columnist Chris Powell joined us to chat about the governor's idea, while CBS News White House reporter Linda Kenyon dropped by with the latest news regarding the U.S. and Iran. Well, maybe it's a start. We can give the governor credit there. Hey, how are you? Governor Ned Lamont announcing, I guess, yesterday, and it really hit the news cycle today. We are going to see a commission. The governor is launching a study on education, which is good. It's always good to study things, and if you're going to study anything, study education. No, I'm kidding with the governor. He signed an executive order yesterday that creates and listen, this is good. Maybe 13 years after we said this is something that's got to happen and get better. Maybe 13 years later, it's time to do this. The governor's order creates a commission on education funding and accountability. Ah, yes, the education money conundrum again and again and again. The story here from the Connecticut Mirror. He drew appreciation for doing this, but it also drew skepticism or over whether the exercise will produce change in how Connecticut pays for its public schools. So a lot of people are saying, hey, this is kind of cool, but don't expect it to do anything here. Which is amazing when you think that in the year 2026, year of our Lord, Anno Domini, as they like to say, in the year 2026, we are still trying to figure out how to better fund our schools. Again, this is one of these things that makes me say, here we go with the flex seal state again. I'm sorry, but you know what I mean. The public signing of the executive order says here in the Connecticut Mirror, order 26-3 comes in the final 3 weeks of the session that has yet to resolve how much of the $500 million, 500 million smackers, informally earmarked for addressing affordability issues, will instead go to aid to municipalities facing higher education costs. Lamont named Natalie Wagner his deputy chief of staff to chair the commission, a choice he says was intended to demonstrate, quote, the importance that we put on this program. So who's going to be on the commission here? Well, this is interesting now, and on the surface, it sounds okay. The commission will include legislators chosen by the Democrat and Republican leaders, the State Commissioner of Education, and a broad range of interested parties like teachers, parents, students, municipal officials, and state and national experts in school funding. All right. So far, so good. Sounds good with me. Some have previously clashed with the governor over his fiscal policies. The governor said the commission will explore how to provide education more affordably as well as funding levels. And we spend, what is it, 20? I should have looked this up. I'll do it on the break. $24,000-$25,000 a year on average educating public school students here in Connecticut. So this is all about the education cost sharing formula. It has not kept pace with inflation, and nothing has been done about it since 2013. So it's been 13 years since people have started to say, hey, we need to adjust this. And of course, over the past 13 years, as often happens here in the state of Connecticut, nothing got done about it. I'm shocked. Aren't you? I'm shocked. The governor says that overall state spending on on K-12 education through ECS has, though, increased in his two terms by almost $500 million, $445 million, and there's more increasing at the local level. So I could go on and on and on and on here and bore you to tears. So we're going to get a commission, some sort of a commission. Did they say this was a blue ribbon commission? Because those are the best kinds, you know. Blue ribbon, no, just a commission on education funding and accountability. So I ask you our question of the day as we kick it off here on a Friday, heading toward the weekend right here on WICC. Will this new commission, in the end, help solve the state's constant battles over municipal education funding? Because we constantly hear there's not enough money, there's not enough money. One question I've always asked is, what's enough? What's enough? And I understand there are people who are legitimately, people who are honestly concerned with how much money we spend on education here, on public sector education. Nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that, but is there ever enough here? And I've asked this question before and gotten some interesting answers from you folks. What is enough in education? And do you think this commission is going to make any sort of a difference here? And when I say what's enough, I'm not trying to be a jerk here, even though that, yeah, they pay you to be a jerk. Well, no, they don't. But again, at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC, how is it that, now, it's not like the governor says, and I'll give him some credit for this, it's not that he hasn't sent more money to cities and towns. You have to do that. But the formula that puts down the basis of that, many people on both sides of the aisle have said, well, it's kind of out of whack here. It needs to be changed. Why did we wait 13 years to do that? Even if we're really doing it now or not, I don't know. But the question is here, is this going to help solve anything? Now, I hope it does. It sounds like the makeup of this whole thing is going to be at least interesting, but is it just going to get packed with people who want to spend more money, or the people who don't want to spend more money not going to be happy with the makeup here? So I don't know. Again, I applaud the governor for at least doing something here. I mean, it only took 13 years, and sometimes, even if you're governor and you say, hey, let's do this, there are people going to say, hey, don't do it. No, 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 no. Can't do it now. Wouldn't be prudent. Don't do it now, governor. But I am interested to hear what you think on this. Education funding. Because, listen, even no matter whether you sent your kids to public school, parochial school, prep school, private school, as a homeowner or somebody who pays property taxes in your city or town, you're still paying for it. Even if you just rent, part of your rent is covering your landlord's property taxes. So you think this thing might actually work? Because the makeup of it sounds interesting. The makeup of it sounds interesting. His deputy chief of staff, Natalie Wagner, is going to chair the commission. It's going to have lawmakers chosen by Democrat and Republican leaders. It'll have the State Commission of Education on there, and here's my favorite, a broad range. If you're going to have a range, make it a broad range. A broad range of interested parties, like teachers, parents, students, municipal officials, and state and national experts in school funding. I should see if I could get on this board, huh? Come on, Governor, you need to have a nutty talk show host on there. Well, Paul, your son has grown. Yeah, but still, why not? I pay taxes to my town to fund the schools. What do you think? I want to hear from you here. Is this going to make a difference or what? At 203-333-9422,
333-WICC.
As we discuss numbers and education here, and the governor saying, hey, it's time that we figure out a new way, or at least look to refine the way that the state gives money to your city or your town for education here. And remember, the more money that Hartford doles out to the schools in your city and your town, the less theoretically, wink, wink, nod, nod, air quotes here, the less theoretically that has to come out of your pocket for your property taxes. Now, I did a little AI deep dive here to find some money numbers that we could reference here. And if anybody, by the way, that either is serving or has served or may serve as a teacher or somebody on a board of education, I'd like to get your thoughts on this, because this is fascinating. Because there are people who say, hey, the education cost sharing formula, in other words, how much money the state gives your city or town, doesn't work. There's got to be a better way. And I don't know, I don't want to get into the minutiae of all that, how they would do that. But on average, and this is when you know, when you hear these numbers, some people are tempted to say, well, hey, wait a minute. This is not necessary, or maybe not necessarily about the money spent, but about how it's spent and costs. I don't know. The Connecticut spends an average of about $22,700 per student already. Now, again, that's not uniform across the 202 school districts here. So if you're wondering, the reference point here is about 22,000. All right, you want to be exact. It's $22,721 a student. This was through last year, the 2024-2025 school year. And this comes from a number of sources here. Now, that is among the highest in the country. So, and again, I'm not an education expert here. I'm not a teacher. I don't see the, if there is what people would consider a puffed up bureaucracy, I don't necessarily see that on a day-to-day basis. I've had teachers tell me that there are a lot of mandates that come down from the state, from the previous iteration of the Department of Education under Democrats like Joe Biden, et cetera, that kept costs up. But from a practical point of view, I cannot speak to that. I can just give you the numbers. The latest total figure statewide is $12.2 billion, which did not keep up with inflation. Now, there are some districts that spend up to $49,000 a student. Others only spend about $16,000 per student. 36% of education funding comes from the state, with a heavy reliance on local property taxes. Now, here's something that maybe the state should take over completely. I don't know. 82% of the spending increase last time they did it was special education. And I've heard that from parents of special needs kids, special education kids. And how about this? This I kind of found interesting here. Connecticut is among the top states for employee benefit costs, spending over $7,000 per student just to cover, I guess, state and local benefits, or local, you know, contractual benefits. Could we save some money there? But if you are currently involved in a local school system, maybe in Fairfield County, maybe in New Haven County, maybe you're a retired teacher or a paraeducator or somebody who was just in the schools for 5, 10, 15, 20, 30, 40, 50 years, God bless you. But did you see things? Did you hear about funding issues? Did you see things where you just shook your head and said, no, it's not about the money. It's about the fact that we're told that we have to do X, Y, and Z. Is that a problem? Is fixing this education cost sharing formula not going to really do anything? I don't know. My question always when we talk about school funding, and we have to educate our kids, I get it. But my question always is, when's enough? What should, in other words, Connecticut's average figure per student is $22,700. What should it be? $30,000? $35,000? $40,000? And please don't hit me with, well, whatever it takes. Well, no, no, no. We can't afford whatever it takes because somebody has to pay. Talk or a text message 203-333-9422-333-WICC. Education on the minds today of a lot of people in Connecticut. The governor yesterday saying, here comes a blue ribbon commission on education funding and accountability in an election year. But of course, this gentleman, one of our regular contributors, is very passionate about what's lacking in Connecticut education, including funding, curriculum, and all that. And he wrote a piece on this, which will pop into your feeds over the weekend into Monday. Chris Powell joins us. You can read all his stuff at chrispowellcolumn.com. Mr. Powell, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
I'm good, Paul, and I'm very glad to be with you.
Well, thank you. A blue ribbon. Hey, if you're going to have a commission, Chris, you might as well have a blue ribbon commission. Are there any other types, Chris? I was wondering this earlier. Are there any other?
Yeah, now that you mention it, I don't recall anything just, you know, candidly being called a study commission or a distraction commission or whatever.
Yeah, but yeah. This, Chris, is interesting. Now, look, it's an election year. He's got pressure from the left of his party. We all know that. But you know what? I know it'll probably be stacked one way or the other, but at least get people talking about it in maybe a public forum. I don't know, Chris. I don't have any great expectations here. But what are your thoughts?
Well, I imagine that the governor has appointed this commission indeed to appease the more liberal wing of his party and the teachers union. You know, they're screaming for more money. They're always screaming for more money. And the governor has been, you know, reluctant to take the fiscal restraints completely off the budget. I imagine it's a mechanism for stalling things for a while until we're past the election. You know, secondly, anybody who's been following education in Connecticut for, I don't know, I'd say at least 6 months knows what the issues and the problems are. Mm-hmm. I don't know that we need a special, you know, commission to study this. I think we know what the issues are now, and the governor just doesn't want to face up to them now.
And outline those issues in, I know you do it in the column, but outline those issues, what you think the governor, especially, Chris, in an election year, doesn't want to touch here.
Well, there are some financial inequities. You know, the cities always feel that they're underfunded. Actually, they spend much more per pupil than most towns do, but they also have a more difficult student population to teach. The goal of the financing system we have now, which we've had for a few decades, was educational equalization. But after a few decades, we still don't seem to have realized that, you know, equalization of educational opportunity and, you know, results in our schools is a contradiction of what's probably the highest principle of education in Connecticut, which is local control.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have equalization as long as you're going to maintain local control. If you want equalization, state government is going to have to run every school system in the state, 90% of the time. It's going to have to decide the kind of people who are hired and what they're paid and how they're assigned and how they're not assigned in some school systems that do better than others. Equalization means the end of any kind of local influence over education. That's one reason why we're never going to have equalization. The second problem here, as I see it, is, you know, after all these decades of throwing more money into education in Connecticut, we still don't realize that it doesn't make any difference.
Yeah.
That per pupil spending is really of almost no influence at all. What matters is per pupil parenting, and the school systems that fail are the school systems that don't have students with two parents in the home. You know, in a nice, wealthy suburban community, nearly all the students have two parents, and they're living you know, on decent incomes. And in the cities, probably 90% of the kids have only one parent, if that, and they're living in poverty. And so they come to, you know, they get into kindergarten, and they're three grades behind, and they don't know their, you know, letters and colors. A lot of them are still in diapers, and the parents are expecting the teachers to change the diapers of the kids. Mm-hmm. It's not money. It's parenting. If you wanted to, you know, do something with money to make a difference, I'd say hire the kids some fathers. And the third the problem here is that in Connecticut, the only rule of administration in public education is social promotion. You couldn't improve education in Connecticut. You couldn't get any equalization unless you were determined to start measuring results. But we have very few proficiency tests in Connecticut. None of them are you know, required for advancement from grade to grade or for graduation. If you had any accountability in the system as you proceeded toward you know, equalization, there'd be a revolt from students and parents and teachers and administrators. They just wouldn't stand for it.
I know.
You know, if we wanted to get some improvement, we would have a promotional test in every grade. You don't get promoted to the next grade unless you achieved a certain amount of learning in your current grade. You know, that's sort of what they're doing in Mississippi.
Yes,
where they're getting,
yes.
They're great, getting great results out of kids in the early grades in Mississippi, because they've got a policy now that they're not going to promote you past third grade unless you're a competent reader. And they're putting pressure not just on the students and not just on the teachers, but on the parents as well. But here in Connecticut, oh, no, we can't have any accountability whatsoever. We're going to promote you from grade to grade and give you a high school diploma. And every kid in every school in Connecticut knows that. What is the incentive to learn? What is the incentive to perform? Well, some kids, you know, get that incentive from parents at home. Mm-hmm. And some kids don't have parents and they don't get that incentive. But that's three reasons why we're never going to get anywhere in education in Connecticut. Better education is impossible here. But we could do something to make educational taxation fairer.
Yeah.
And I think this is known to everybody who's involved with the issue at the Capitol, because it comes up every year. State government could fully fund special education. That is the extra education that has to be given to the kids with learning disabilities and physical disabilities and behavior problems. But we don't fund that. That's a social problem. It shouldn't be any one town's problem. But the cities have more of these kids because they have more of the poor households, and they have to pay I'd say 80% of the extra special education expenses, which drives up their tax rates and makes living in the city even less desirable. If we could do one thing to improve education, at least improve educational taxation in Connecticut, we could have state government just fully fund special education everywhere, which would disproportionately benefit the cities. Now, the governor said this week that you know, he was thinking of spending hundreds of millions of dollars more in the name of education this year. They were going to negotiate this even before we get a report from this study commission.
Yeah,
we spend that kind of money, we just throw another few hundred million in education. It's not going to do anything. It's just going to, you know, help the teachers get better cars. But if you're going to spend, well, that's where most of the money in education goes.
Yeah,
it goes
yeah.
to teacher salaries. It's 90% of it. But if we were going to use a few hundred millions of those dollars that the governor's looking at to fully fund special education, well, I don't think that would be any skin over anybody's nose. They're thinking of spending the money anyway. Do they have to give it to teacher raises everywhere? Could we just solve the the special education unfairness problem. I hope somebody brings that up.
Yeah, I would hope, like I said, and I hope some of these meetings are carried by CTN before they run into executive session. Chris, before I let you go here, I just got a report in. You'll be happy to know that neither Yale University nor the city of New Haven burned down the other night because Linda McMahon actually was given a forum to talk about education and welcomed her viewpoints, the discussion of which welcomed by Yale's president, Maury McGinnis, Chris, who seems like a breath of fresh air at old Eli. It's from
well,
what I read.
I congratulate Yale on its success, but I would point out that the Buckley Institute did not announce the venue for the event until the last second. I think they just told the people who had tickets to attend where to go.
Chris Powell is the guest. Chris, thanks. ChrisPowellColumn.com. Chris, enjoy, and we'll talk next month. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Paul.
All right, there you go. Let's shift gears here just for a moment, because everything we're seeing now are things suddenly turning today? What's the White House saying about the U.S. and Iran? And I'm looking at oil prices falling, the Dow going up. CBS News reporter, our friend Linda Kenyon in D.C. Hey, Linda, good afternoon. How are you?
Hello, good afternoon to you. It has been a kind of a roller coaster sort of day on this whole Iran situation, and it seems to be changing by the moment.
Yeah, the president is saying one thing, Iran is saying another thing, but Linda, would I be wrong in saying it generally, the general direction of this is somewhat positive or not here? What are you getting?
Well, it does seem positive, but I would be also a bit tentative because the president has said many things. Iran has denied many of the things the president has said. Mm-hmm. And it's very hard to understand really what is actually happening. but that seems to be a theme often here in Washington. But I will say that there are some contradictions right now, but I would hasten to add that the reactions on Wall Street do seem to reflect a certain bit of cautious optimism.
Yeah, and the one last thing, Linda, here I found interesting was this notion that we're, and again, like you say, sometimes what Mr. Trump says doesn't turn out to be what it is in the end, but this notion that we are either going to go get or Iran is going to hand over its enriched uranium. Did I read or hear that right?
Yeah, the president did say that there's an agreement with Iran that it will stop enriching uranium forever, he said, that the U.S. and Iran will work together to remove that enriched uranium. And then he said the U.S. will take it. But Iran's foreign minister is now saying, oh, wait a minute, that's not what we said. So, you know, he says we're not transferring this enriched uranium to anybody, and we are not going to hand it over. And that follows an announcement this morning from Iran's foreign minister saying that Iran is reopening the Strait of Hormuz. And then President Trump said, this is great news. And then a couple minutes later, he sent out a social media post saying the U.S. naval blockade of the Strait of Hormuz will remain in full force.
Yeah, you know, Linda, having been a street reporter for a bunch of years, all you folks there, when I hear this happen, I just go, about 30 or 40 people said, forget that script. That ain't going to work next hour.
Right. Into the shredder it goes.
Into the shredder. Linda Kenyon. Linda, thanks. Be well. Thanks, Linda. Appreciate
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. You're welcome.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Yeah.